Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story or an especially interesting essay or some philosophical quotes or thoughts or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. Well, it's great to be back. It's been quite a while. I'm excited to have our new studio producer, Mike, here with us today. And actually, the last time we did a show has been before we started with the scourge of the pandemic. And I thought it only appropriate that we hit the ball rolling and do that by starting with a Christmas show. And that's what we're doing today. I've always enjoyed doing my Christmas shows. And this is certainly one that certainly be memorable, and for no other reason that we're back. I'd like to start with a little essay by Pam Lannon regarding remembering Christmas past. And Pam writes, "Christmas is a time filled with magic and wonder. We seem to know that instinctively as children and forget it as we grow older. Maybe children experience the sheer joy of Christmas more effortlessly than adults because they're experiencing so many delights of the season for the first time. I think if we adults spent less time worrying about the Christmas to come and more time remembering Christmas's past, we too would take more delight in Christmas present. I think we need to remember what holiday experiences were like the very first time we experienced them. Try to remember the first time you were old enough to really understand who Santa Claus is and how excited you were to find the presents he left you under the tree and in your stocking. Try to remember the first time you watched Miracle on 34th Street, when you couldn't imagine how Mr. Gailey would prove Kris Kringle was the one and only Santa Claus. Or the first time you watched A Christmas Story, how it made your laugh so hard, your sides hurt. Try to remember the first time your parents took you downtown to see the lights on Michigan Avenue and the giant tree at Marshall Fields and eating lunch in the Walnut Room. Try to remember the first time you held a candle and sang Silent Night at Christmas Eve Mass or service. Try to remember the first December 25th you jumped up from your bed and looked out the window to find it was, in fact, a white Christmas. Or the first time you heard Bing Crosby sing his wonderful rendition of that song. Try to remember the first time you gave a child you love a Christmas gift and how much it brought to watch her open it. How much joy it brought to watch her open it, even if she was more excited by the box than what was inside. Try to remember the first time you saw The Nutcracker or A Christmas Carol and how you left the performance filled with the Christmas spirit. Someone told me recently that some people lose a bit of their Christmas spirit as they get older because they've been through so many Christmases that it's hard to get excited about them anymore. I'm going to try to prevent that from happening by taking time each year to remember the first times I experienced the many wonders of Christmas and try to carry those feelings with me. Remember Christmas past." Pam Lannon wrote that essay for The Doings a few years ago, and I always like to revisit it because it's so touching. It's true. You know, it might be the first time somebody else has experienced it, those little ones. We've experienced many of them, but to remember what we as children enjoyed and remembered so fondly, that's part of Christmas. One of the quintessential Christmas songs written by Mel Torme, Chestnuts Roasting on an Open Fire, The Christmas Song. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose,
Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh. And every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. And so I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you. So I'm offering the simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you.
Nat King Cole, A Christmas Song, and we're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Another little story I like to read every year is written by the columnist of the Chicago Sun-Times, Michael Sneed, and always enjoyable. I try to get through this without kind of getting a little misty-eyed, but nonetheless, it's that time of year, so I'm entitled to that. Once had a boss who felt a good story was worth repeating. It's a little yarn about a little boy called Sam, who learned the truth about Santa Claus on Christmas Eve. But like a good father, Steve worried about how his son was handling this turn in his life. So Steve penned a note to Sam from Santa and left it under the tree. And it read, "Dear Sam, your dad stayed up last night to tell me that you know as much about me as I do about you. Well, good. I'm glad you asked. And don't worry. No child ever leaves me. Ask your mom. Ask your dad. They know I don't live in the North Pole. Too cold. They know I don't ride in a sleigh. Too dangerous. Still, they love me. And so will you, even 50 years from now. Oh, and what do you think happened last night, just as you were asking about me? Why, a baby was born out in Kalispell, Montana. That's right. Just as you were putting aside your belief, a brand new child was born who can put it to good use. So long as that keeps happening, Sam, I'll never be out of a job. Sam, I want to wish you a wonderful life. If you don't mind, I will continue to drop by on future Christmases just to make sure you're okay. Love, Santa. P.S. Remember, you don't have to believe in me to know I'm there." And as a grandpa, and as a father, and out there, some great grandpas, tough to read that, tough to understand that. But it happens, but I think it says very well. Merry Christmas from Santa.
Wisdom has it that every time a Christmas bell rings, an angel gets his wings. And as one of those angels, Clarence, in fact, says to a Mr. George Bailey of Bedford Falls, "Remember, George, no man is a failure who has friends. And thanks for the wings." American Blues Theater marks its return to live in-person theater with its 20th annual production of It's a Wonderful Life, live in Chicago from Frank Capra's film and directed by artistic director Gwendolyn Whiteside with musical direction by ensemble member Michael Mahler. It's a Wonderful Life, live in Chicago will run through December 31st at Victory Gardens Theater, 2433 North Lincoln. George Bailey, the everyman from small-town Bedford Falls whose dreams of escape and adventure were stopped by family obligation and civic duty, has fallen onto desperate times. Only a miracle can save him from despair. Filled with original music and classic holiday carols, this critically acclaimed warm holiday favorite makes the bell ring every time. For 20 years, American Blues has treated audiences to a live retelling of the Frank Capra classic in a 1940s radio broadcast tradition, making It's a Wonderful Life live in Chicago the second longest-running holiday play in Chicago. And on the line with us right now is returning for his 13th season. Sean is a proud artistic affiliate of American Blues Theater, now contributing as the Foley artist, the person whose invaluable role it is to create all the special sound effects for American Blues Theater as it presents its 20th anniversary production of It's a Wonderful Life from the Academy Award-nominated film by Frank Capra, live in Chicago at Victory Gardens Theater, 2433 North Lincoln, through December 31st. On the line with us right now is Sean Gowdy. Sean, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you, Kevin. Great to be here.
13 years you've been doing this, and 13 years of a beloved Christmas classic.
Yes, yes. It's hard to believe, but yes, 13 years.
From a short story by Philip Van Doren Stern called The Greatest Gift. You know, he originally published this. He tried to get it published, couldn't get it published, and sent it as a Christmas card to his friends, and now it's become a classic, which year in and year out is just beloved, and we enjoy, everybody enjoys returning to and enjoying every Christmas. And now, of course, the great job that American Blues Theater has done for 20 years. It's something got to be very gratifying for you and the cast.
Oh, it's absolutely wonderful. We've seen kids grow up. We've seen people get married and have their first babies. And we've celebrated the ups and downs of people's lives for 20 years. It's been an incredible experience.
You know, and it's something that was interesting because as this was being put together, all the different accomplished journalists and writers who contributed to the script, Dorothy Parker, Dalton Trumbo, Clifford Odets, were all part of putting this together. And, of course, it got 5 Academy Award nominations. And now you carry this through. And what you do, and explain to our audience here what you do as the Foley effects supervisor.
So I do all the old-school sound effects that you would have heard in a traditional radio drama. Mm-hmm. So I provide the footsteps, the doors opening and closing, the typewriter, all the way up to that bell.
Which is very important because, what is Clarence, about 295 years old now?
Yeah.
And he's been waiting for his wings forever. And just a little aside as I say this, because there was just a wonderful obituary in today's Sun-Times about John Moorline, who spent so many years as part of the ensemble of American Blues Theater.
Yeah.
God rest his soul, and I know you're heading to his memorial service here shortly. But what a great man. He's touched so many people in his role, not only as Clarence, but his role as Mr. Potter, too.
Yeah, yeah. It's the duality of that character John was just so amazing with.
You know, you do this for, and done this for so many years, Sean. It must be kind of like getting the family together every Christmas season to go and see everybody that's coming back. And you make it such a welcoming experience because you give cookies out to the audience and the audience becomes, you know, familiar with who you are and you're familiar with them. It's like, nice to see you again.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's been a little funny this year because everybody has to wear masks in the theater, of course.
Right.
So now I'm have to really look at people's upper faces and go, okay, I think that's them. I'll wave at them, and if they wave back, that's a good sign.
What is the spirit of this play that touches so many people and has touched so many people for so many years, Sean, in your feelings?
I think it's just the understanding of how important we really can be to so many that are around us. And at a time of year where for some people that can be really hard to grasp, they might be dealing with, things on their side that we don't know. And this shines a light for them. And for those that grew up with the movie, it's something that they have now decided to share with their kids and their grandkids, and they love sharing it with the way that we do it, because it does. We do welcome them in, and it makes them part of the story. And I think that's what's beautiful for folks that get to come to the show. But yeah, it's just such an amazing story of hope.
And to your point, it spans the generations. You have grandparents who have taken their children who now take their grandchildren. They come year in, year out. My wife the other day said, when are we going to be watching A Wonderful Life? I said, well, you know, that's right. That's what we do every year. And it puts you in the spirit, as does A Christmas Carol, as listening in. And we have the opportunity of talking to Scott Speck, the music director from the Joffrey Ballet, later on in our show, as the music of Tchaikovsky. It's just something that we just enjoy every year. And if you could promise me a little snow, it'd even put us more in a Christmas spirit.
Oh, yes, yes. It is lovely when the snow joins us.
But 65 degrees today, I'm not so sure that'll happen. But nonetheless, anything special this year at It's a Wonderful Life that you haven't done in years past?
We've made some changes to the story a little bit, just to make it a little more accessible for folks that may not be as familiar with the film. We are, you know, getting to the point where the younger generation may not be as familiar with that, and so this opens it up more to them. There's a few little sound effects here and there that may have changed, but I always consider that part of the game of people that see the show all the time. You know, can they tell what I'm doing different this year?
Sure. And then you get the youngest generation who don't really know what Foley effects are. They don't maybe not know what a typewriter is. And, of course, the sound and so forth, sounds that they aren't familiar with, that we grew up with or our grandparents grew up with, well, that's a little different than for this generation.
Sure. I would definitely say that I am a hit with the kid. There's a definite, you know, adults enjoy seeing it happen, but kids just, after the show, always come up and, I love what you did. And I was telling them, hey, if you want a job where you can break things and slam things and not get in trouble for it, this is the job for you.
They'll be taking your place pretty soon, baby. Well, I know you have to get going. Your time is short, and you need to visit the service for John. And I want to thank you for taking a little time to chat about this. And certainly I will wish you and your family Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, continued success. And I'm going to finish up as we say goodbye here, though. I'm going to finish up with a few thoughts on American Blues Theater, It's a Wonderful Life. But I'll let you go, and please give our best to everyone.
Thank you, Kevin. I will. Thank you for your time.
Take care, Sean.
Bye.
Bye now. That was Sean Gowdy, who handles the Foley effects at American Blues Theater. But, again, there's a service for John Morline, who spent many, many years as a ensemble member of American Blues Theater, and It's a Wonderful Life, and the services are for him this morning, and wanted to let Sean go and enjoy that. But, you know, Wonderful Life, just a terrific tradition that we have every year to enjoy what's going on with Christmas. Again, as I said, 5 Academy Award nominations, Frank Capra's and Jimmy Stewart's favorite films. Takes place in Bedford Falls, New York, on Christmas Eve, 1946, and the story of George Bailey and how his life changed, just running into Clarence, an angel who's trying to get his wings. And by the success that he has sharing with George Bailey, he does just that. You know, as it is said in the classic, It's a Wonderful Life, you see, George, each man's life touches many other lives. And when he's not around, he leaves an awful hole, doesn't he? This play is like an American version of Dickens's A Christmas Carol, but there are some differences between the two, apart from time and place. In A Christmas Carol, Scrooge is given a chance to change the way he lives his life. In A Wonderful Life, the hero, George Bailey, is given the chance to change the way he looks at life. An adjustment in the way he sees his place in the world. He doesn't need to change the way he acts, just the way he looks at life. George, you've had a wonderful life. At this time of year, when many of us are taking stocks of our lives, especially during this time of pandemic as we try to get back to our normal day-to-day living, looking back on the past year, making wishes for the present, and getting ready to make resolution for the future, we are always drawn to this story, this beautiful little story. George wasn't a Superman type hero. He was like many of us, a human being trying to live life the best way he knows how. And maybe this little story should serve as a gentle reminder to all of us that we are all capable of making small decisions every day and practicing those awesome random acts of kindness that touch many other lives. And ultimately, in our small actions, change the world in big ways. Because to the world, you might be just one person. But to one person, you never know. You might just be the world. American Blues Theater makes its return to live in-person theater with its 20th annual production of It's a Wonderful Life, live in Chicago, from Frank Capra's film and directed by artistic director Gwendolyn Whiteside, with musical direction by ensemble member Michael Mahler. It's a Wonderful Life, live in Chicago, run through December 31st. So if you have a chance, please go out, enjoy it. And for information, 773-871-3000. It's a Wonderful Life, live in Chicago. One of my favorite songs for Christmas is Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Of course, came from Meet Me in St. Louis, first sung by Judy Garland. And a couple of people, many people actually, have covered it. I enjoy the rendition by both James Taylor and Frank Sinatra. So we'll kind of do that little comparison, see what you like. So we'll start out, of course, with James Taylor's Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Christmas future is far away. Christmas past is past. Christmas present is here today, bringing joy that may last. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. May your heart be light. In a year our troubles will be out of sight. From now on, have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay. In a year our troubles will be miles away. Precious friends who are dear to us, gather near to us once more. I know that in a year we all will be together, if the fates allow. Till then, we'll just have to muddle through somehow. Everybody knows.
Have yourself a Merry Little Christmas. James Taylor, and we're back on the Kevin Moore Show. Always love that rendition, and hopefully we'll be able to get to another one with Frank Sinatra coming up. A little story, another Christmas story, hopefully. Maybe make you a little misty-eyed. Story about a man who was driving home from a meeting one evening, about 5, stuck in traffic on Colorado Boulevard, and the car started to choke and splutter and die. I barely managed to coast into a gas station, glad only that I would not be blocking traffic and would have a somewhat warm spot to wait for the tow truck, because it wouldn't even turn over. Before I could make a call, I saw a woman walking out of the Quickie Mart building, and it looked like she slipped on some ice and fell into a gas pump, so I got out to see if she was okay. When I got there, it looked more like she had been overcome by sobs than that she had fallen. She was a young woman who looked really haggard with dark circles under her eyes. She dropped something as I helped her up, and I picked it up to give it to her. It was a nickel. At that moment, everything came into focus for me. The crying woman, the ancient Suburban crammed full of stuff with 3 kids in the back, 1 in a car seat, and the gas pump reading $14.95. I asked her if she was okay and if she needed help, and she just kept saying, "I don't want my kids to see me crying." So we stood on the other side of the pump from her car. She said she was driving to California and that things were very hard for her right now. So I asked, "And you were praying?" That made her back away from me a little, but I assured her I was not a crazy person and said, "He heard you, and he sent me." I took out my card and swiped it through the card reader on the pump so she could fill up her car completely, and while it was fueling, walked next door to the McDonald's and bought 2 big bags of food, some gift certificates for more, and a big cup of coffee. She gave the food to the kids in the car, who attacked it like wolves, and we stood by the pump eating fries and talking a little. She told me her name and that she lived in Kansas City. Her boyfriend left 2 months ago, and she had not been able to make ends meet. She knew she wouldn't have money to pay rent January 1st, and finally, in desperation, had finally called her parents, with whom she had not spoken in about 5 years. They lived in California and said she could come live with them and try to get on her feet there. So, she packed up everything she owned in the car. She told the kids they were going to California for Christmas, but not that they were going to live there. I gave her my gloves, a little hug, and said a quick prayer with her for safety on the road. As I was walking over to my car, she said, "So, mister, are you like an angel or something?" This definitely made me cry. I said, "My dear, at this time of year, angels are really busy. So sometimes God uses just regular people." It was so incredible to be part of someone else's miracle. And of course, you guessed it, when I got in my car, darn things started right away and got me home with no problem. I'll put it in the shop tomorrow to check, but I suspect the mechanic won't find anything wrong. Sometimes, like in It's a Wonderful Life, the angels fly close enough to you that you can hear the flutter of their wings. What a tender little story. Now let's listen to Frank Sinatra sing, "Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas."
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay.
Make the Yuletide gay.
Here we are as in olden days, happy golden days of yore. Faithful friends who are dear to us, gather near to us. Through the years we all will be together, if the fates allow. Hang a shining star upon the highest bough, and have yourself a merry little Christmas now. The fates allow. Hang a shining star upon the highest bough, and have yourself a merry little Christmas now.
Frank Sinatra, Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. So which one did you like better? You're right, I like them both. And we're back on the Kevin Moore Show. The Joffrey Ballet celebrates the holidays with return of Christopher Wheeldon's Chicago set, The Nutcracker. The Joffrey Ballet's critically acclaimed reimagined classic, The Nutcracker, by Tony Award-winning choreographer Christopher Wheeldon, is certain to be a highlight of the Joffrey's first ever season at the historic Lyric Opera House, 20 North Wacker Drive, in performances through December 26th. Plus, signature scenes from the production will be projected on the world's largest canvases, Art on the Mart, for the second year in partnership with Chicago's Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events. The digital art projection, designed by local production studio The Mill, with music arranged by Joffrey assistant conductor and company pianist Michael Moritz, will be displayed on the Mart's 2.5-acre river facade. It can be viewed nightly for free from the jetty section of the Chicago Riverwalk on Wacker Drive between Wells Street and Franklin through December 30th. The Nutcracker is a celebration of the optimistic spirit that allowed Chicago to rise from the ashes of the Great Chicago Fire and produce the world's Columbian Exposition 128 years ago, said Ashley Weeder, the Mary Galvin Artistic Director. We are thrilled to be able to present one of the world's most beloved holiday traditions at the Lyric Opera House for the first time and celebrate the tenacity that enables Chicagoans to overcome even the most extraordinary challenges. And on the line with us right now is a man named the 2021 Conductor of the Year by the Illinois Council of Orchestras, an accomplished artist who has influenced the Chicago classical music scene for over a decade, having worked with such legends as Yo-Yo Ma, Yitzhak Perlman, and Renee Fleming all over the world. Scott is the artistic director and principal conductor with the Chicago Philharmonic and the music director of the Joffrey Ballet, now presenting in its annual tradition the Joffrey Ballet's presentation of Christopher Wheeldon's The Nutcracker through December 26th at the Joffrey's new home, the Lyric Opera House. Mr. Scott Speck. Scott, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you, and great to be with you.
Well, it's great to have you, and an exciting time of the year, Scott. I was talking to our guest a little, one of our guests a little earlier who was involved with It's a Wonderful Life. And isn't that one of the traditions of Christmas, that Tchaikovsky's a Nutcracker and It's a Wonderful Life and Dickens is a Christmas Carol? It, it just puts us in the spirit that we want to be around at Christmas time.
Oh, it certainly is. The Nutcracker is just such a holiday favorite, certainly the most popular ballet that's ever performed anywhere in the world. I myself have conducted it over 400 times. But I'll tell you one thing that's quite amazing is, you know, last year we couldn't do this, right?
Right, right.
And
right,
so
right.
What with so many of the theaters being dark and silent and so many of the orchestras being, frankly, unemployed, not to mention dancers,
right.
It's really a very special Christmas gift to be able to bring this tradition back this year.
I love the way you said it. It's a Christmas gift. It's a gift for all of us. It's a gift to be back after these terrible times with the pandemic, and not
yeah.
that that's over, but it's certainly better than it was, and it's at least gives us a reason to all be together.
That's right. And, you know, being together, if people think about it, it's really quite complicated to make this happen on the stage of a Lyric Opera House with all of the dancers, you know, unmasked on the stage, mm-hmm. and all of the musicians crowded in very close to each other at the pit. They've taken extraordinary precautions with, of course, vaccinations for everyone, but also constant testing to make sure that everyone is healthy. And so we're able to really approximate, well, we're able to create the same kind of closeness and feeling of family, both on stage and under the stage and in the audience, that we did before.
You know, I was just talking with my studio producer, Mike, about that. A community, a family. And, you know, put your mask on. Get your vaccination so that we can get back together and enjoy what we've enjoyed for so many years and still continue that.
That's it. You sure don't have to convince me of that. And I have to say, I found, by and large, in the Chicagoland area, people are – they really understand that. People
yeah.
are really smart about that. And so in our performances, all of the audience, as well as all of the performers, are vaccinated. And it feels very safe to be around each other.
Right, right. You know, the history of the Nutcracker, of course, written by E.T.A. Hoffman, The Nutcracker and the Mouse King, and it was revisited by and revised by Alex Dumas, who wrote The Three Musketeers. Tchaikovsky took it over in 1890, premiered at the Kirov Ballet, the Mariinsky Theater. First time in San Francisco, Balanchine put it together at the New York City Ballet. And now, of course, Joffrey has taken it to new heights. And now with Christopher Wheeldon's, you know, revisiting and reimagining of it, it continues for, you know, another generation. I always say my parents took me to the Nutcracker. My grandparents were familiar with it. I take my children. I've taken my grandchildren. And it's a timeless experience that you want to pass on from generation to generation. And I have to say, I envy you to be able to perform this and put this together, conduct this, because no matter how much I listen to the music, I have to put it on all the time at Christmas time.
It is a thrill. You know, it definitely is a thrill. And when I hear that music at other times of the year, it makes me think, pretty soon I'm going to be able to conduct this 20 more times. But I wanted to address something that you said. You know, it's absolutely true that Christopher Wheeldon, the great British choreographer, came in and reimagined the story of the Nutcracker. So instead of taking place in a rich man's house where a very privileged young girl gets yet another gift, which is the Nutcracker, in this case it takes place in a very poor woman's house. She is a laborer, a sculptor, on the grounds of where the Chicago World's Fair is going to take place.
Mm-hmm.
And her daughter gets a Nutcracker, which is the greatest gift by far that she's ever gotten. And this takes her on a journey in the second act through an imagining of the Chicago World's Fair in 1893. The actual action of this version takes place in December on Christmas Eve of 1892, so just before the World's Fair has opened. And get this, December 24th, 1892, is 6 days after that premiere of the Nutcracker at the Mariinsky Theater that
yeah,
you were talking
right.
about.
Isn't that interesting?
And that's a total coincidence, but it just worked out so well that, in theory, the Nutcracker could have been heard at that time. And what I love about this version is it has such a Chicago connection, but also, you know, in the original Nutcracker, you know, when they go to the land of sweets and they're suddenly entertained by Arabian dancers,
right.
you know, the question is, what's going on here? Why is this happening? Well, in this new version, just brilliantly reimagined, each of the characteristic national dances takes place in one of the pavilions of the World's Fair.
Okay. Yeah.
So it's the Arabian Pavilion, the Spanish Pavilion, and so on. And it makes total sense. And the what used to be the tripak, the Russian dance, that has been reimagined as Buffalo Bill's Wild West show, which in reality did take place right next to the World's Fair. It wasn't on the grounds, but right next to it. And so what was kind of a Russian tripak suddenly becomes a hoedown. And it just works perfectly. I have to also say, I know that in past years you've often talked to our artistic director, Ashley Weider.
One of my good friends.
About this.
Dear friend.
Yeah,
dear friend.
And the great Ashley Weider, the artistic director who brought in Chris Wheeldon and had this vision to make a new Nutcracker like this. I would be remiss if I did not mention that at this moment, today, Ashley Weider is meeting the Queen of England. He's in England to receive an MBE, which is, I believe, Most Excellent Order of the British Empire, which is given to artists of all kinds of professions. It's the highest thing, I think, given to artists in England. And basically, our artistic director is getting knighted today.
Phenomenal. Now, does that mean every time I go down to the gauge and see him down there with Brian, I gotta say, Sir Ashley? Does I have to address him that way?
I have no idea. You can ask him that. I don't know if this particular title comes with Sir or not, but I know that he is getting a pin personally affixed by Queen Elizabeth.
Well, that's great. What a great way to celebrate Christmas.
Yeah, no kidding. He told me the other day, this has been such a wild ride.
Boy, I'll
and
see
I it. Understand it, but, you know, Ashley is brilliant. He has a vision for the Joffrey Ballet, and I'll tell you one thing that I'm very, very grateful for. Ashley himself started life playing music. He played the flute and he played the cello, and he finds live music to be an essential part of ballet. Mm-hmm. And when he took over at the Joffrey, he made it one of the goals that every single show we put on would have some live music element. And that has now been happening all these years later. It has come to fruition. It has been in fruition for the last couple of years. And I, as a musician, and all the musicians in the pit, orchestra pit, are extremely grateful for that.
How long have you been involved with the Joffrey, Scott?
I started in about 2010 as music director. I had guest conducted a couple of times before, and it went really well.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, Ashley and I knew each other because we were both the second in command in our respective positions at the San Francisco Ballet. You talked about how
San Francisco had the first Nutcracker.
That's the first time, or the first Nutcracker in America, I should say. Let me clarify. That's the first time that I ever conducted for San Francisco Ballet, and it was back in about 1998. And at that point, we met each other, worked together a lot. He was the associate artistic director. I was the associate conductor.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he came to Chicago and took over the Joffrey Ballet, he performed a ballet that had only been done in San Francisco before, and he wanted a conductor who had conducted it before, so he called me as a guest, and that led to such a wonderful relationship with the company. So I've been their music director since about 2010.
Hey, lucky for us.
lucky for me.
lucky for us. And, you know, it's true. There's nothing like listening to live music. And you go to different performances, and whether it's ballet or theater, and, you know, things are piped in and so forth, and that's maybe the way that has to be in certain situations. But to come to the Joffrey and always listen to live music, there's second to none, especially, come on, just the Nutcracker itself, you know, whether it's Swan Lake or Sleeping Beauty, and now you have the Nutcracker. I mean, Tchaikovsky's three great ballets. What more could you ask for? It's just wonderful.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And he only wrote three ballets, and they're all huge masterpieces, among the most popular of all. I was going to say that, you know, a lot of people may not know, when they hear a ballet or see a ballet, it's not just the dancers dancing against this backdrop of the music. One of the reasons for having live music, besides the fact that it's glorious, is that the music can adjust to the particular dancers and the way they're feeling that night. So let's say you have a ballerina who can stretch her leg up and touch her foot to her head, and meanwhile her other foot is on point, and she can hold that a little bit extra long today. Well, we can hold the note in the music so she doesn't have to come down so soon. Or let's say there's a male dancer who can leap and jump higher than other dancers, so it takes him longer to come down. So then we give him a slower tempo. And there's a constant calibration and constant refocusing of what our tempo should be based on exactly what's happening in the moment. So there's this kind of alchemy. Well, it's really like a pas de deux between the dance and the music, where the total is much more than the sum of its parts.
And you're able to do that based on who's on the stage there?
Yeah, very much so.
Wow.
You know, like, let's give an example. The Chinese dance. The Chinese dance.
Right.
In the Nutcracker. We have three or four guys who do the Chinese dance in different performances, that mm-hmm. is, the main guy.
Yeah.
It's one guy and two dragons. That's the dance of
this
version.
Right.
And the one guy, one of them likes it really fast. Two of them like it at a moderate tempo. And one of them kind of likes it at a somewhat slower tempo. If I know in advance who it's going to be, because I can't always see until they come out on stage, which is after the first couple of seconds of music, then I can set the tempo for that dancer. And that allows that dancer to be at his best, to jump as high as he needs to take the time he needs for a pirouette, or if he needs the energy to push him to go faster, to do that. So, again, that's something that absolutely is impossible with a recording.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know the word karaoke means empty orchestra in Japanese? That's exactly what ballet without live music is.
Okay. I'm getting an education here, Scott. I'm really enjoying this, and I really am. The three themes of timelessness in The Nutcracker, a human story about a little girl who dreams about the future, Tchaikovsky's music, Musleika's music in Swan Lake and Sleeping Beauty, and the dancing, as you say. And I think that I'd be surprised if people really knew the nuances of that, what you're just telling me about being able to calibrate that music to what's going on stage. And people take it for granted, but you're right. As you look at the different divertissements in the different countries mm-hmm. that are presented, I was introduced mm-hmm. to this decades ago, Scott, at the Ruth Page at the Erie Crown Theater many, many years ago.
Fantastic.
And came with my parents, I took my kids and so forth. And as we see this, and you alluded to this to your point a little earlier, now we adjust this to a different thinking, a different generation, and a different group of people who are viewing this because, you know, while we've seen it many times and you've played it many times, you don't know who's in the orchestra for the first time that's enjoying it for the first time that will make this their memory and their tradition from year to year. And that's a tradition, that's a responsibility we as adults and teachers and artists have to convey and carry that on to the generations and the next.
You know, you make a really good point. And usually when I'm conducting this, in the rehearsal, I'll say to the orchestra, because, you know, it can get tiring to play the same thing 26 times, right, over the course
sure,
of just
sure,
a few weeks.
Right, right.
And I say to them, remember, in every performance, there's going to be someone here listening to it for the first time, and there will be someone listening to it for the last time.
Right. Well,
and so we have that responsibility. And, you know, another thing is that this particular ballet, I don't know of any other ballet that can use a wider age range of participants on the stage, because you can have the littlest kid playing a mouse, and you can have the regular party goers, the parents and mm-hmm. and the children and so on. And then you have all the great professional dancers doing, you know, at the top of their game, who are probably mostly in their 20s and 30s. And then you can have Drosselmeyer in the original, and this version is the impresario,
right.
the Daniel Burnham character who designed
right.
the World's Fair,
right, right.
You know, who's the male lead in this production.
Make no
and then
small
you've got
plans,
grandfather.
Right. Yeah.
So literally, if you're a dancer, from about the age of 5 up until 85, you can be in the Nutcracker.
You know, and what's nice too, Scott, is that Ashley has introduced some physically challenged kids into the Nutcracker as part of the ballet. How important
yes.
that is! How important it is for that person, that kid that's in the audience who has seen this, who is experiencing this, to be able to say, "Oh, I could do that. I can enjoy that. Now I'm part of this. I become part of this. I'm participatory in what's going on, not only listening to it, but what's happening on stage." How special
yeah.
that is, Scott.
I think we want every kind of representation to be part of what we're doing on stage. And I have to say, to the credit of Robert Joffrey, who created the Nutcracker that was done here for, I don't know, 25 seasons before the new one started 5 years ago, Robert Joffrey actually had one kid in a wheelchair in the party scene
mm-hmm.
already. So when I came to join the company, they were doing that. And I was like, what a masterstroke. Why has no one else done this?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I wanted to point out is that, you know, we're at the Opera House now, a beautiful space. The orchestra in the pit is the Lyric Opera Orchestra, which is just a wonderful, consummate group. They're a fantastic orchestra, but they, a lot of them had never played the Nutcracker before.
Really?
Can you imagine?
No, I can't.
So, because during Nutcracker season, they were busy doing operas, you know, in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So, so to have the opportunity to introduce them to this and see the wonder on their faces, because a lot of them, for example, you know, they play the Nutcracker Suite various places in their life, but they never played Act One, the beautiful snow scene. Mm-hmm. And some of this music is just to die for, gorgeous. For the last 8 years, the orchestra in the pit has been the Chicago Philharmonic, which is the orchestra where, as you mentioned, I'm artistic director and principal conductor.
Mm-hmm.
And that orchestra is also a phenomenal group. And now they're playing for all kinds of groups, near and far, ballet companies and other companies who come in. They'll be playing for the English National Ballet. They've also played in the past for Miami City Ballet and Bolshoi and New York American Ballet Theater. So they're much, much more well-versed in playing for ballet. And so it's, you know, they're, just like I said, they're just an incredible group of musicians. I love them dearly. So it's a different feeling in the pit now, working with people whose instincts are more very, very well honed for opera, and less so for ballet, and trying to impart to these consummate musicians in the Chicago Lyric Opera Orchestra some of the ballet playing skills that the Chicago Philharmonic has been deploying all these years.
You know, I can't tell you how much I'm enjoying our conversation. And this is reflective, Scott.
Oh.
This conversation is reflective of what theater and what art and what ballet and what music does. It stimulates and engages your imagination. It stimulates and engages your creativity. It stimulates and engages your intellect. And that's what art does, and that's what music does. And I'm just delighted that we had this conversation. I want to have you back to talk about the Chicago Philharmonic, but I just want to end here about the Nutcracker. Evidently, you can leave the Nutcracker, but the Nutcracker may never leave you. The ballet's rhythms and a host of associated memories don't disappear. They just get filed away in a part of the brain and released in flashbacks filled with sometimes early memories and emotions. And, of course, there's the whole Christmas thing. The Nutcracker serves up an idealized Christmas on a platter full of treats that everyone has been promised at one time or other by our parents or by books and movies and TV specials.
Mm-hmm.
Christmas can be a joyful and problematic holiday for nearly everyone. It's not religious enough for some. It's too religious for others. It's lonely for those who without family, and it's too full of relatives for those who have it enough of being known by a childhood nickname. There's pressure to spend money, to commune, to be festive, and the holidays can become a time of heightened expectations and recurring disappointments. But the Nutcracker is simpler. Like Christmas, it always comes around in December, but no one expects quite so much from a ballet, so its gifts can be discovered in a more relaxed manner. It provides for all of us a small oasis of beauty, inspiration, and togetherness for the Christmas season. The Joffrey Ballet's critically acclaimed reimagined classic, The Nutcracker, by Tony Award-winning choreographer Christopher Wheeldon, is certain to be a highlight of the Joffrey's first ever season at the historic Lyric Opera House through December 24th. On the line with us right now is the music director for the Joffrey Ballet, Scott Speck. Scott, I'm going to give a phone number if people would like tickets, 312-386-8905. You know, thank you so much for taking some time. What a delightful conversation. And as I said, I'd like to have you back to chat a little bit about the Chicago Philharmonic.
Sure, I would love that. And, you know, I'll also say in addition to the phone number that you gave, you can also go to joffreyballet.org. And tickets are certainly available there. It's going to the 26th, so that's the day after Christmas. And some days there are two shows, so there should be lots of opportunities for anyone who's interested. And I also want to compliment you on what you said about the Christmas season. I just thought that was incredibly eloquent. You should consider a career in radio.
Well, I have a face for radio, if that's what you mean. Well, I will wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, and I'll look forward to seeing Sir Ashley when he comes back.
Yeah, exactly. Sounds great. Thanks.
Thank you,
so
my
much.
Friend. Take care. Scott Speck, the music director for the Joffrey Ballet and the conductor of the year by the Illinois Council of Orchestras, also the artistic director of the Chicago Philharmonic. What a delightful conversation. Very stimulating, intellectually stimulating, and certainly full of insights that I had not known. And it was just great chatting with him. So, again, the Joffrey at the new home of the Lyric Opera House, 20 North Racker Drive, till December 26th. For information, 312-386-8905. Well, you remember the three wise men, of course. They were called the Magi, and that was short for magicians because they came from the east, of course, to visit the stable and the baby Jesus. They followed the star. But what if we had three wise women? What would they have done? Three wise men, of course, brought gold, frankincense, and myrrh. But the three wise women would have asked for directions, arrived on time, helped deliver the baby, cleaned the stable, probably made a casserole, brought practical gift, and then there would be peace on earth. Something to think about, right? You know, one of my favorite stories from many years ago about a little girl by the name of Virginia O'Hanlon, entitled Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus by Francis P. Church. I'd like to share that with you now. Dear editor, I am 8 years old. Some of my little friends say there is no Santa Claus. Papa says, if you see it in the sun, it's so. Please tell me the truth. Is there a Santa Claus? Signed, Virginia O'Hanlon. Virginia, your little friends are wrong. They have been affected by the skepticism of a skeptical age. They do not believe except they see. They think that nothing can be which is not comprehensible by their little minds. All minds, Virginia, whether they be men's or children's, are little. In this great universe of ours, man is a mere insect, an ant in his intellect, as compared with the boundless world about him, as measured by the intelligence capable of grasping the whole of truth and knowledge. Yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus. He exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist, and you know that they abound and give to your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would be the world if there were no Santa Claus. It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. There would be no childlike faith then, no poetry, no romance to make tolerable this existence. We should have no enjoyment except in sense and sight. The eternal light with which childhood fills the world would be extinguished. Not believe in Santa Claus? You might as well not believe in fairies. You might get your papa to hire men to watch in all the chimneys on Christmas Eve to catch Santa Claus. But even if they did not see Santa Claus coming down, what would that prove? Nobody sees Santa Claus, but that's no sign that there is no Santa Claus. The most real things in the world are those that neither children nor men can see. No Santa Claus? Thank God he lives, and he lives, Virginia, forever. 1,000 years from now, Virginia, nay, 10 times 10,000 years from now, he will continue to make glad the heart of childhood. From the newspaper, The New York Sun, September 21st, 1897. And here we are, still enjoying it. Let's enjoy Frank Sinatra again, and I'll Be Home for Christmas. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
I'll be home for Christmas. You can plan on me. Please have snow and mistletoe and presents on the tree. Christmas Eve will find me where I'll be home for Christmas. If only in my dreams,
won't you please have snow and mistletoe?
Christmas Eve will find me where the love light gleams.
Frank Sinatra, I'll Be Home for Christmas, my dad's favorite Christmas song. We're back on the Kevin Moore Show. A few thoughts before we say goodbye. The holiday season, a time of loving, a time of giving. The first gift, that of his only son, was the beginning of the tradition of love known today as Christmas. And so, during this season when traditions are followed and love is in the hearts of all, I want to share these humble gifts with you. I wish you the gift of kindness. Kindness in your words so as to create self-confidence within your spirit and soul. Kindness in your thinking so as to create a profound new attitude by which to live each new day. And kindness in your giving so as to enhance the abundant love you give throughout the year. I wish you the gift of magic. Magic to fill each candle, star, and light on your tree with a special feeling of love that only Christmas brings. And magic to last all year long and remind you of your many blessings. Yes, it would be a wonderful tradition to keep that magical kindness of Christmas in our hearts each day throughout the year. And so, the tradition of gift-giving reaches far beyond just the joy of buying and receiving. It's my hope that your Christmas spirit and love will be recognized in the sparkle of your eye and the grin on your face throughout this entire season as you remember that first gift, his only son. May the peace and joy of the season be yours today. And the Christmas tradition of love be yours to share throughout the coming year. God bless you all and those you love. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me, and I hope you, our listeners, have enjoyed this time as much as I have. I'd especially like to thank our guests, Sean Gowdy, the Foley actor who provides such invaluable role as he creates the special effects for American Blues Theater production of It's a Wonderful Life, live in Chicago, 20th anniversary production. At the Victory Gardens Theater through December 31st. For information, 773-871-3000. And Scott Speck, the musical director of the Joffrey Ballet and the artistic director and principal conductor with the Chicago Philharmonic, as the Joffrey Ballet presents in its annual tradition Christopher Wheeldon's The Nutcracker through December 26th. At Joffrey's new home, the Lyric Opera House. For information, 312-386-8905. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought every day at least to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day, and Merry Christmas, everyone.
In her eyes, I may not see forever.
Forever. If you can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends.
If we can try with every day to make it better as it grows, with any luck, then I suppose the music never ends. May not see forever, forever. If you can be the best of lovers, yet be the best of friends.
If we can try.